and thank you for standing by. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. All participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session at the end of today's presentation. To ask a question at that time, please press star one. I would now like to turn the call over to your host, Lauren Geseth. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Michelle. Good morning, and thank you for joining us to hear NOAA's winter outlook for the United States. My name is Lauren Geseth from NOAA Communications. If you have questions following the briefing, you can reach me at my email, which is Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N, dot G-A-C-H-E-F, at NOAA.gov, and by phone at 202-740-8314. NOAA produces seasonal temperature and precipitation outlooks and the U.S. drought outlook to help communities prepare for what is likely to come in the next few months and minimize weather impacts on lives and livelihoods. Today's discussion will begin with brief remarks, and then we'll take questions from reporters. A recording of this briefing will be made available online at www.noaa.gov about an hour after our call ends today. Delivering the U.S. winter outlook is Mike Halpert, Deputy Director of NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, located in College Park, Maryland. Mike is on the team that develops the seasonal forecasts and the El Nino Southern Oscillation Diagnostic Discussion. Here's Mike Halpert.
Thank you, Lauren. The National Weather Service plays a critical role in helping the nation to prepare for, respond to, and recover from extreme weather and climate events. Providing impact-based decision support services improves the public's ability to make fast, smart, and life-saving decisions, enabling us to build a more weather-ready and climate-smart nation. The winter outlook is produced in order to give American communities the best possible scientific prediction of how we think the winter will develop across the nation. Our team at the Climate Prediction Center issues the seasonal forecast so users can account for risks and opportunities when making climate-sensitive decisions. This outlook supports everyone, from local and state governments that must plan for public needs this winter, to large and small businesses as they determine how the winter could impact transportation, market demand for their goods and services, and prices. The winter outlook is probabilistic in nature, meaning that the maps show those areas that are most likely to be warmer or colder than normal and wetter or drier. However, the nature of a probabilistic forecast means that other outcomes are always possible, just less likely. And in fact, for our probabilities to be reliable, the less likely outcomes must occur from time to time. We find ourselves on the verge of El Nino this year, with the equatorial Pacific Ocean recently warming to levels close to the minimum threshold. There is currently an El Nino watch in place, with a 70 to 75% chance that El Nino will develop during the next few months. The last winter that was impacted by El Nino was back in 2015-16. Many may remember that episode as one of the strongest of the past 60 years. And some might even recall that the winter of 2015-16 was the warmest winter on record for the continental United States. However, we're not anticipating a repeat of that winter, as this El Nino is expected to be much weaker than that one. Now on to the forecasts. For temperature, the outlook favors warmer than normal conditions across Hawaii, Alaska, and much of the northern and western U.S., with the largest probabilities found in Hawaii, Alaska, and in the Pacific Northwest and in the Northern Plains. No part of the U.S. is favored to have below average temperatures. There is no tilt in the odds towards above, near, or below average in the Southeast, Ohio Valley, and Mid-Atlantic. This area is the region most likely to see a colder than average winter, but that chance is still only about 33%. The precipitation forecast favors wetter than average conditions across the southern tier of the U.S. and along the southeast coast up into the mid-Atlantic, as well as in southern Alaska and the Alaskan Panhandle. Northern Florida and southern Georgia have the greatest odds for receiving above average precipitation this winter. Drier than average conditions are most likely in parts of the northern Rockies and northern plains, as well as in the Great Lakes and Northern Ohio Valley and in Hawaii. The rest of the country falls into the equal chances category, which means they have equal chances for above, near, or below normal precipitation. Heading into this winter, drought conditions are a significant concern in large parts of the West. Improvement is likely in areas throughout Arizona and New Mexico, the southern sections of Utah and Colorado, and the coastal Pacific Northwest. Areas where we expect drought to persist include portions of the Southwest, Southern California, the Central Great Basin and Central Rockies, portions of the interior Pacific Northwest, and the Northern Plains. With that, let me turn it back to Lauren.
Thanks, Mike. Before we move to Q&A, I want to introduce David Miskus. David leads the Climate Prediction Center's Drought Outlook team and contributes to the weekly Drought Monitor. David Miskus will take drought-related questions, while Mike Halpert will focus on questions about the seasonal temperature and precipitation outlook. Operator, we can start the Q&A.
Thank you. At this time, we will begin today's question and answer session of the conference. Please press star, then one, and you will be prompted to clearly record your name for question introduction. Again, to ask a question at this time, please press star one and clearly record your name for question introduction. Our first question will come from Seth Borenstein from the Associated Press. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you for doing this. Mike, looking at the maps, you've got the southeast wetter, wet southeast up to the east coast on, much of the east coast wetter than normal, and much of that same area equal chances. So if you put wetter than normal and equal chances together, should you put those together? What does that mean? In snow, are we, wetter than normal could be both snow and rain, and obviously in the southeast it's more rain. What about places from, like, the Mid-Atlantic coast up? Are we looking at a snowier or a normal snowy winter for the East Coast?
Well, Seth, these are, of course, we don't issue, and it's something we're looking into, but we don't issue seasonal snow forecasts. We did look, and I did go back and look at what seasonal snowfall has been like in really the whole country during El Nino events. Folks might remember some of the stronger El Nino events have also had some pretty significant snowstorms, along the Mideast, along the East Coast from the Mid-Atlantic up into the Northeast. Interestingly, though, when you break it down, and again, you're kind of minimizing sample size, but when you break it down between the strong events and the weaker events, you don't really see the signal as much in the weaker events. So, not that I would write off snow for this winter, certainly, but snow is really a weather type event, and it really relates to the track of a storm and the timing, whether there's cold air delivery. So I wouldn't jump one way or the other from, trying to combine a precipitation and a temperature forecast into snow or no snow.
So, but in general, when you're talking about stronger and weaker events here with El Niños, are you saying you get a couple more of the strong events but less of the weaker events, or you just don't have a signal on the weaker events?
Well, that's what we've seen, that it's a very weak tilt towards less snow in roughly the 10 weaker events. Again, it's hard to draw real conclusions from that. The interesting thing that I found, actually, was that if you look at the 10 strongest events, there's a pretty clear signal for above normal snow. And two of those 10 events were years that, at least in the Washington, D.C. area, they got zero. So it really tells you those other eight were really bonanza-type years. You just don't see that signal in the weaker events.
Okay. And when you're talking weaker events, is this weaker El Nino or just weaker snow systems?
No, this is regarding the strength of El Nino.
Okay. And I'll let others go, and maybe I'll ask again. Go ahead. Thank you.
Our next question will come from Tony Wood from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Your line is now open.
Mike, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Tony.
Okay. I just wanted to ask a kind of state-of-the-art question. I'm wondering if you can see the day when you might get to a point where you could capture some extreme event like the warmth of last February in the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast, or at least you could get to a point where you could say the odds are tilted towards a month or a season in which temperatures might average, say, 3 or 4 or 5 degrees above normal?
You know, that's something that we're actively going to be researching over the next, I dare say, couple years. You know, will we find anything out about that? It's really hard to say. You know, obviously, a lot of times the seasonal average is strongly dependent on those type of extreme events. But it isn't really something that we've had an opportunity to dig into just yet. But it is certainly on our list of things to do.
And what would you say is the number one thing that is keeping you from doing that?
Well, you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, data availability. I mean, when we look at our computer models that we're currently running, they're not necessarily as high a resolution as the models might need to be to forecast those type of extremes. But we, you know, we'll look at the data we have available and see whether anything shows up in those. But it might be the type of thing where we're still waiting on increased computing power.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question will come from Jason Sainow from the Washington Post. Your line is now open.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for doing this as always. Question for you. I've seen some buzz in the past week or so about the so-called blob forming in the Northeast Pacific. There's been record high pressure over Alaska and the Bering Sea region this fall. And, of course, if we remember back to several winters ago when that blob was in place, we had a big ridge over the west trough in the east, and we had pretty cold winters in the eastern U.S. Have you guys looked at that, and do you think that's more of a sort of a transient signal right now and it may go away, or do you think there's a chance that that could be persistent and we could end up with the big ridge and drought in the west and stormy east as winter takes hold? So welcome your thoughts on that.
Well, sure. That there's always a chance that the pattern that's, you know, kind of developing now sets up. I don't think that I would ascribe it to the ocean kind of maintaining that pattern. I think really when you get into the northern latitudes, it's typically the atmosphere kind of leads the response to what the ocean is doing. And sure, you know, we've seen that. I guess it's been a few winters now. Actually, I was surprised or not that the last four winters, you know, coast to coast, I mean, there have been cold periods and cold regions, but if you look at the country as a whole, they've really been quite mild since the winter of 2013-14. You know,
right.
what we can say, and that's kind of that, you know, fairly large area of EC on the map, you know, we've actually been really minimizing the amount of areas where that are equal chances. But there's, you know, a pretty high degree of uncertainty as to what's going to happen in, you know, Middle Atlantic, Ohio Valley, Southeast, and certainly that relates to, you know, that potential upstream pattern.
Okay, thanks. And just for the record, I think last year you told me that the track record of winter outlooks is about 30% better than the flip of a coin. Do you stand by that statement as sort of a generalization?
You know, actually, the last couple of years we've been doing quite well, and that 30% is up more like 40% right now. But we'll see whether we can hold on to that. But yeah, that's the general level of skill for these types of seasonal forecasts.
All right, excellent. Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Our next question will come from Brian Sullivan from Bloomberg News. Your line is now open.
Hey, thanks everyone. Could you folks dive into the drought prospects for the West a little bit deeper, and you know, how you think it's going to shake out by the time spring rolls around?
Hey, Brian, this is Dave. We're currently thinking, because of the El Nino, assuming that will ramp up this winter, and the expected impacts will be wetter than normal chances across the South. That's why we did improvement across much of the southern southwestern sections of Arizona, New Mexico, and southern Colorado and Utah. But the further north you go, it gets a little more unusual, or equal chances, so we're not sure about that, so we kept it persistent right now. And the improvement along the Pacific Northwest coast, that's pretty based on just climatology. It's a very wet period from now through the end of January along the coast. So we kept it above improvement west of the Cascades, but as you get over the Cascades, a little more uncertainty, so we kept it persistent right now. a lot of the area of the Northern Rockies is not in droughted or abnormal dryness right now, so we didn't do any development there right now. But maybe later in the winter, if the dry pattern does set up as the three-month outlooks are showing, we might show some development maybe a month or two down the road in the Northern Rockies. Southern California, that's always the La Nina, El Nino. Doesn't seem to follow the pattern as much as it does further to the east across the southern tier states. So, again, that was more uncertainty there, so we just kept it persistent in Southern California.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question will come from Doyle Rice from USA Today. Your line is now open.
Oh, hi, gang. Thanks for doing this. Just I wondered if you've broken it down, if anything, by month, if there's any strong signals, like for each of the three individual months for either temperature or precip. I don't see any maps on the CPC site that kind of breaks it out that way, but I just wondered what you're seeing for December, January, and February individually.
Yeah, individual monthly forecasts other than the first lead, so there is a forecast available for November, is something that we're not doing at this time, and we're mainly not doing it because we've kind of looked at it and we don't have a whole lot of skill doing that. Things that set the background and enable us to have skill on the seasonal time scale, the monthly time scale is kind of too short for that, and we oftentimes then what happens on the monthly basis can be, developed or related more to things that are operate on sub-seasonal time scales, like, the intraseasonal oscillations, the Madden-Julian oscillation for one. Sometimes you'll see a strong projection on the Arctic oscillation or a different teleconnection pattern that persists for, two or three weeks and really dominates a month, maybe not so much a season. And at this point, there's really no predictability on that at these type of leads, two, three, 4 months into the future.
I see. Thanks. And just to follow up, when will your next El Nino update come out?
That will be November the 8th. And as long as we're talking about updates, so on November the 15th, we will provide the kind of the last look at the December, January, and February forecast.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Patricia Kitchen from Newsday, New York. Your line is now open.
Hi. Hello there. Hi, Mike. Thanks so much for doing this. So we're interested in the coastal areas of New York, which is primarily Long Island and the New York City area. So I see it's in the area slightly warmer than normal for the three-month stretch there. So looking at the precipitation, it's just outside the line for slightly wetter than normal. And I'm wondering, how firm are those boundary lines between equal chance of and a slight tilt towards?
Well, so let me first kind of clarify that this isn't saying it's going to be slightly warm. It says that there is a slight chance temperatures will be in the upper tercile or so will be milder than average.
Right,
so
exactly.
So when you're on either side of the line, so the probabilities in the equal chance area are 33, 33, 33
right.
For mm-hmm. above, near, and below. So when you just get into the, if you're just on the let's say the green side of the line, so say mm-hmm. that becomes 35, so your distribution now becomes 35, 33, 30, whatever's left.
right.
31. Thank you. Right.
Right.
So that's kind of the shift we're talking about. So,
right.
Whether you're on either side of the line, there's not a huge difference in all honesty as to what your potential forecast is.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So is this would be that slight tilt towards above normal precip?
That's correct.
So just because it's looking to be slightly tilting towards warmer than normal, that's not to say that there couldn't be a couple of wicked cold days in there, right?
Well, this actually says nothing about the intra-seasonal, even areas that out in the west where we have, a better than a 50% chance the season will be above average. Certainly, it's winter. I mean, I would expect there to be cold weather and snow in areas that typically get snow. So that's right. This is looking at the, you know, when you kind of get to March, what
right.
those 90 days yeah. average, and it really doesn't say anything about individual variability throughout the month.
Right. Sure, exactly. But so people shouldn't interpret that as, oh, it's going to be, you know, warmer. It's tilting towards warmer than normal for the whole stretch, because there could be plenty of opportunities, as you point out, for a little bit of precipitation to match up with a little bit of cold weather, and boom, you got a snowstorm.
For sure.
Yeah, okay. All right. Great. Well, thank you so much.
Our next question will come from Karine Jerome from Weather Station. Your line is now open.
Thank you very much. It's from Weather Nation. I appreciate that. My question has mostly been answered, but I did have one follow-up question. Mike, if you could speak to any other large-scale or global patterns that you've considered in this winter outlook, aside from El Nino, as you had talked about. Thank you.
Sure. You know, we consider kind of the two underpinnings are, in addition to El Nino, are what we consider, what we call the optimal climate normal, which is a, you know, a scientific way for talking about the longer term trends. And in particular, the trends right now for winter, and people oftentimes think kind of confuse that or think of it as the same thing as being climate change, and it really isn't, because in spatially and temporally, or in other words, in particular areas at different times of the year, sometimes the trends are up and sometimes they're actually down. It turns out right now that the trends across the South are among the strongest towards above average temperatures, and so it's kind of like the fact that we have the Southeast as equal chances is kind of weighed on us at some level, that there is a pretty fair amount of uncertainty as to whether we will see, you know, a winter with, you know, other teleconnection patterns playing a more significant role than El Nino, you know, things like the North Atlantic Oscillation or the Arctic Oscillation. You know, one of the things I really didn't emphasize too much, but if you compare this outlook to the one from this time in 2015, the probabilities are generally much lower coast to coast, and again, that reflects the fact that as it's likely to be a much weaker event, the impacts downstream over North America are also likely to be, you know, less consistent, less persistent, and so we might see a fair amount of variability this winter.
Great. Thank you so much.
Our next question will come from Jeff Versella with KDKTV Pittsburgh. Your line is now open.
Hey, good morning, Mike. I got a couple of questions. The first one, heading into the winter, you're indicating that the signal from El Nino right now is fairly weak. Do you expect it to increase in intensity over the course of the next few months?
Well, right now we actually don't yet quite have El Nino, so we're expecting it to develop over the next month or two. And you know, typically when we have El Nino, this is still maybe a little early before we really start to see signals kick in further downstream anyhow. So the answer would be yes. And certainly any forcing out of the equatorial Pacific is something that we would expect to see, you know, as we head closer into the winter and through the winter.
As a result then of the increasing signal over the course of the next couple of months and looking at the maps, I don't know if it'd be fair to say you're anticipating more of a Pacific air mass influence across the U.S. rather than straight Arctic all the time. So as a result, would that indicate the polar low staying closer to the poles rather than shifting south over the winter?
You know, that kind of leads into forecasting the Arctic Oscillation or North Atlantic Oscillation. It's something that you know, a lot of folks have tried to do. Some folks think they have figured it out. What we believe is that there's a lot of natural variability in that signal. Our belief, no one has convinced us, and you know, you just have to look back at the last few years at folks attempting to forecast it. Have not been all that successful. You know, we certainly do track these types of patterns. You know, it might surprise folks who kind of pay attention to winter forecasts from others and generally forecast a negative Arctic oscillation, which would result in colder and snowier weather, that particular pattern has been positive the last five December, January, February average of that in a row. So we haven't really seen that type of a pattern. It certainly doesn't mean we won't see it. And, you know, the fact that we have that area, the strongest signals with that for cold are actually in the area that are equal chances. So it's certainly something that we're you know, I won't say concerned, but we're certainly something that we're allowing that possibility of, and, you know, we'll just have to see, you know, as the winter starts to evolve.
All right, thanks.
Our next question will come from Bryce Anderson from Progressive Farmer. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for your briefing today. A lot of things that I was wanting to check on have been covered, but there's one detail I think maybe would be worth asking about, and that is with the water temperatures in the Pacific Ocean off Mexico and Southern California being pretty warm, do you see any chance that there could be kind of the feeder dynamic set up for even an atmospheric river type of development to maybe offer better moisture chances into California and into the Southwest because of those ocean temperatures acting the way they are?
Well, you know, this is Mike. The bulk of rainfall into the West Coast during the winter are typically with these atmospheric rivers. So, you know, certainly we would expect to see some number of those this winter. You know, the real question in where there's been a fair amount of research, I'm not aware of any strong results yet, but it is in the number of those type of systems. Now, you know, given the warmth of the ocean, I would think that sure, any atmospheric river event would maybe be wetter than if the ocean wasn't quite so warm. But oftentimes for California, what makes or breaks them is the number of those as opposed to, you know, having just one or two strong ones. I think they're looking, you know, maybe 6 to 8 is kind of the holy grail of what they're looking for. And at this point, we don't really have the ability to predict those.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Our next question will come from Julius Wigham from Palm Beach Post Palm. Your line is now open.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. I'm just wondering, as we are approaching our dry season here in South Florida, what you're anticipating as far as possible rainfall totals, and also if you might have a sense of where we are as far as rainfall we've had in comparison to last year when we entered the dry season.
Ooh, well, I don't at my fingertips, I don't have how much rain you've had. I believe recently, because I know, like, at least the peninsula part of the state didn't get much out of Michael, certainly. But, you know, as far as entering the dry season, I mean, that is the area that has the strongest relationship, really, over the U.S. with El Nino. So, and of course, when you're in a drier time of year, you could say it's easier to be wetter than average. And so oftentimes during these El Nino winters, we'll see some enhanced storminess in the Gulf, and we'll see storms move across Florida and provide rainfall. I guess at this point, there's not really any drought in Florida. So, you know, I guess I'm not sure if they've been wetter than average, it certainly hasn't been significantly dry.
Hey, Julius, this is Dave. The east coast of Florida has been drier than the western with Michael and everything else. So we did have some abnormally dry D0 on the drought monitor along the east coast. But like Mike said, the winter outlook is favoring above normal precipitation. So hopefully that will either stop any kind of development of drought or wipe out the D0 as we go on to the season. So we're not anticipating any drought development in Florida through the next 3 months.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question will come from Mindy Weisberger from Live Science. Your line is now open.
Yes, good morning, and thank you so much for doing this. So, Mike, you mentioned earlier that there's been an emerging pattern of mild winters in recent years. This is obviously alongside warmer than average temperatures in the U.S. and across the world month to month. September was the fourth hottest month on record. 2018 is on track to also be the fourth hottest year on record. So to what extent would you say that climate change is shaping this trend of mild winters that we're seeing now, and is this something that's likely to continue?
Well, you know, I'm probably not going to touch the continue, only because, you know, one of the things that will change from for our forecast is that in a few years we will change our base period to comparing to the 30-year 1981 to 2010 to being 1991 to 2020. So, you know, given that you're throwing out 10 older years and adding 10 warmer years, most likely, you know, I suspect that we'll see some relaxation, at least, of these types of comparison to our normal. You know, as far as does that contribute to the mild winters? Well, yeah, I mean, look, 2015-16, while it was a strong El Nino, was the warmest year coast to coast. You know, we had two other real strong El Ninos back in 97-98 and 82-83, and while they were warm, they weren't as warm as 2015-16. So there is undoubtedly some background signal in there that contributes to the overall shape of things. Having said that, when we're looking at what we term climate variability, which is more the subseasonal to seasonal variability, the potential swings in temperature there far exceed that kind of background gradual warming signal. So, you know, even in on a warming planet, you know, it doesn't mean winter goes away and it's never cold again. And you know, you don't have to go back that far to find a cold winter. I mean, 2013-14 was a cold winter. I mean, shoot, you only really have to look if you want a cold month. I think March of 2018 was a pretty cold month in a good chunk of the country. So, you know, they're kind of different magnitudes of scale, but, you know, all things being equal, that slight kick that we get out of the climate change signal does tilt things towards the warm side.
All right. Thank you very much.
Our next question will come from Joe Cutter from Town Square Media. Your line is now open.
Good morning, Mike, and thanks for doing this. Appreciate it very much. Can you give us some sort of thumbnail for the winter of 2018-2019 for the Mid-Atlantic and specifically New Jersey, where we are as far as temperature and precipitation is concerned?
Sure. The precip forecast is a slight tilt towards wetter than average. You know, not strong, certainly. I think we talked a little bit about Long Island earlier, but, you know, somewhere, you know, if you want to look at the probabilistic distribution, it's probably, call it 37, 33, 30. See, I got all those three numbers right. Temperature-wise, the northern part of the state is a slight tilt towards above. The southern part of the state is no tilt. So, again, you know, equal chances. So just as likely to be a mild, normal, or a cold winter.
Thanks very much.
Next question will come from John Humucker from Hastings Tribune. Your line is now open.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to ask Dave about the drought outlook for South Central Nebraska. When I'd spoken with the Climate Prediction Center earlier this year, they had talked about drought conditions and that we were supposed to be in a drought here, and we haven't really experienced that to the extreme that probably was predicted. And I'm just curious if that's going to be delayed, if we're going to get that now, or if we're going to get a normal winter.
Yeah, you're heading into your dry season now. The winter's quite dry in the plains right now. But what happened is we had a very wet September and October so far through much of the central and eastern part of the country, and that any kind of drought, it was getting kind of dry in the western portion of Nebraska, and the recent precipitation has pretty much wiped out that D0 that was there. So as you go into the colder months now and drier months, and there's really no drought there right now, I think you're going to, quote, a hibernation state once the soil starts freezing and everything else back in, you know, December, January. So I think you're pretty much locked into what you are right now, which is close to normal. And like I said, the recent wetness has really alleviated any kind of developing drought that might have occurred if it had been a drier September and October.
All right. Excellent. Appreciate it, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Don Paul from WKBW-TV, Buffalo, New York. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Hi, Mike. Do you think it's possible that some segments of the public now oversimplify from press coverage of El Nino that ooh, El Nino, it's going to be mild. In fact, and I'll give name credit, the National Weather Service Buffalo Forecast Office, a senior forecaster here, has done some excellent statistical work and found that western New York, for example, during weak or neutral ANSOs, tend to have colder than average winters. And yet, our local paper, for whom I write, they didn't call me, had an editorial last Saturday saying, El Nino, we're probably going to have a mild winter. And my position is, if my part of the country has a milder winter, it's not going to be due to ENSO. It leaves us, as you know better than I do, vulnerable to the impacts of the shorter-term oscillations elsewhere, the MJO and the SOI, the Southern Oscillation Index. Do you think people are oversimplifying, not scientists, but the public, oversimplifying El Nino because of oversimplified coverage?
Well, I don't know about the coverage part, but I do tend to agree with you that, if people hear El Nino, they think, kind of the expectations from the real strong events. And so one of the things we've been trying to do, and I think I kind of threw it into my talking points that might be in the press release, which is right, that weaker events, a lot of times the impacts over the U.S. really aren't much different than no El Nino. When you're looking at La Nina, weak ones and strong ones aren't as different, but there can be significant differences on the El Nino side between weaker and stronger ones. And I suspect that in general, the average person who hears about El Nino has expectations for the strong ones, and that might not be correct.
I'll finish up here. February 2015 was the coldest month on record for Buffalo. We had an average temperature of 11 degrees, and that was during a weak El Nino, which kind of leans toward my point that other things can really rule the roost if ENSO is weak or neutral.
Yeah, that winter 2014-15 is an interesting one because actually as we went through it, although the ocean warmed up, right to around the minimum thresholds, we really didn't see some of the other atmospheric responses. So we did not consider that. And if you were to go back and view our old discussions, we never declared El Nino until the spring that year, as we then headed into, of course, the very strong 2015-16. So that was one that I don't know is a great example for a weak El Nino, but I'm sure you could find others. In particular, the ones we always harken back to are the ones in the late 70s, 76, 77, and 77, 78, that were two of the coldest winters really on record, almost coast to coast, and those were both weak El Ninos. Now, it was 40 years ago, maybe a different world compared to where we are today, but those certainly did happen during a weak El Ninos.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Alexis Egeland from Cronkite News, Arizona, PBS. Your line is now open.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure.
All right. So I know that Arizona has seen a lot of rain and flooding this month, and I believe they said it was the wettest October in state history. So I just wanted to see if this is something that we should expect through the winter and through the El Nino, or if it's something that we can just attribute as, kind of residual from Sergio.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the October rain is not part of the winter pattern that we would expect to see. I mean, those were some recurving tropical systems. The likely thing is as we head through November, particularly into December, January, and February, is when we would expect to see kind of a different character of rain, not that type of a tropical system making landfall, but more, as we would call them, garden variety low pressure systems that are maybe moving in either through California or even through Baja and through Mexico into the Southwest. But what we've seen in October is really not reflective of what we'd expect to see this winter.
Perfect. Thank you.
Our next question will come from Susan Wood from Patch.com. Your line is now open.
Thank you. I'm glad you're doing this. Thanks, Mike. I have a question. I was keying right on to what you said about no part of the U.S. is favored to have below average temperatures. How normal is that? Are we looking at some kind of pattern here that, you know, that's due to, you know, a level of warming and climate change?
Well, you know, as I said, these are forecasts that are relative to a 30-year period that ends in 2010. So we are later on in the decade before we update our normals period. And so that certainly contributes to it. You know, having said that, last winter, with the weaker La Nina, we did certainly favor below average in the Northern Plains, and that was turned out to be a good forecast for us. So, you know, if you were to look at all of our forecasts for all of our seasons, we certainly favor above normal temperatures far more than we favor below normal. And that's likely to continue, you know, at least until we update our normals, and then we see how our tools shake out with a warmer reference period.
Right. And then I was wondering, I'm very interested in, I realize the San Francisco Bay Area up into Tahoe, which is the area I'm interested in, is on the cusp. But, I mean, we have such extremes from one season to another that I was wondering if you could shed some light on what you're seeing in particular for that midsection of California.
Well, I mean, we favor above normal temperatures, you know, along the whole West Coast, so that's not really along the cusp there. And, you know, regarding rainfall or precipitation, you know, California is tricky. You know, even when folks thought that the stronger El Niños, which certainly tipped the odds pretty strongly towards wet, you know, didn't really pan out. I guess the northern part of the state was on the wetter side in 2015-16. Certainly the central and southern parts were not. You know, this year, given a weak El Nino, we're really just not seeing anything to base, you know, a forecast for either a wet or a dry winter. So, you know, that we have the option to leave the probabilistic distribution alone, and that's what we've done at this point.
Okay, because what I was wondering is, if we're going to start, for example, are the Tahoe ski resorts going to start to see more, you know, that there's a pattern to see more rain versus snow, and therefore that affects, you know, our water supply, you know, in that entire California region?
Yeah, you know, again, assuming a milder than average winter, and that's the way we lean there, you know, certainly snow levels typically rise with that. You know, I'm not a California or Nevada expert, so I don't know what they are and what they might rise to, but I'm sure that the folks out there are aware of that, and it's probably a concern whether, you know, the limited number of storms that come in, whether they're warm or whether they're cold enough to provide snow.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Seth Borenstein from Associated Press. Your line is now open.
Okay, Mike, thank you. You're saying El Nino is likely to be weak. I mean, is it just because it's embryonic, or even when it's mature, it's going to be weak? And is there a good analog year for what you're forecasting for the strength of this ENSA?
Right. So when we say weak, that would actually be we're expecting it to remain weak at its peak. So, again, that would be departures from a half to 1 degree Celsius above average. You know, that's largely, you know, we're kind of getting late in the year, and we look at subsurface, and there's actually pretty good model agreement amongst, you know, there's a bunch of forecasts, a bunch of techniques for forecasting it. You know, there's really certainly nothing that says this is going to be a strong event. So we're pretty confident we can rule that out. You know, as far as analogs, you know, I think the last weak ones we saw were maybe 06, 07, and 04, 05. But analog forecasting on seasonal timescales is really, really tough. I mean, we just don't have enough cases where you can say much about that. I like to quote one of our retired scientists who said you need, you know, literally thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of seasons, of years of data where you can try to accommodate all of the different modes of climate variability where you might be able to say something. So analog forecasting, I know it's appealing and attractive to a lot of folks, and a lot of people will look at the state of ENSO and a few other things and say this looks like, you know, whatever year, and they'll base their forecast off of it. You know, we've looked into that, and we don't think it's a successful way to issue a seasonal forecast.
So in terms of your seasonal forecast, how, you know, since this is a weekend El Nino and even that is forecast not here, how much of the forecast would you say is influenced by El Nino?
Well, you know, it's certainly one factor. It certainly factors into a lot of the different computer models that we use. You know, there's a bunch of different statistical techniques that we rely on. Some of those use El Nino. Some of those use, you know, other observed atmospheric variables. You know, as far as how much, I don't know, 50% of it. I mean, it's really hard to throw a number out like that. I mean, it's certainly a factor. Look, when we create these forecasts, the first step is always determining, you know, whether there's going to be El Nino or La Nina that could impact things. So it's certainly our you know, strongest factor.
That's okay. I just wanted to make sure that even though it's a weekend El Nino, it is still the strongest factor of everything going in.
Yeah, you know, like I said, that and the trends, and to be honest, a lot of the trends are not consistent with this forecast. I mean, the trends over the last 10 to 15 years look more like La Nina. So in certain cases, we've actually gone against the trends with this El Nino.
All right, and you're familiar with, you know, I know you're familiar with Judah Cohen and the whole, you know, the Siberian theory.
Snowfall.
Yeah,
Snyder. Right.
So, what are we looking at, given that?
Well, if we were dependent on that, it would be first off challenging to do this forecast in October because I believe he's dependent on October, and you know. While we're certainly aware of it, I actually think from what I've seen that right now Siberian snow has been pretty low. I mean, really most of the snow in the Northern Hemisphere has actually been over North America and over Canada. So Siberia, at least at this point, is down. You know, I don't know what that will do for his forecast. Again, it's not something that we don't base our forecasts off of what they're doing. So, you know, we're aware of it. We just, you know, it's not really something that factors into our outcome.
And forgive me, I'm just trying to remember. There's so many different factors. So, in general, and it's not yours, I know, it's Judah's. Is it low snow in Siberia means
that means a positive Arctic oscillation or a positive North Atlantic oscillation, which would be a warmer winter over the mid-latitudes.
Which is sort of what you're looking at, except for our chunk of the world, of the country.
but for different reasons.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1, and you'll be prompted to record your name. Our next question will come from Kim Fundingsland from Minot Daily News in North Dakota. Your line is now open.
Well, thank you very much. A fist bump and a thumbs up for doing this. Good information. Right now, we're under an El Nino watch. If an El Nino is declared, how might that affect, if any, or what effect would it have, if any, on your probability outlooks for temperatures and precipitation? Do you expect that to result in a change in those outlooks?
Not really, because even though we're under a watch, the forecast was issued certainly with the expectation that we would be upgrading and that we would be having an El Nino. Where we could see a change would be as if things in the Pacific kind of fell apart and it looked like we were not going to develop El Nino and we were going to stay neutral. Then we would see changes, I suspect. But, you know, assuming that this, you know, the Pacific behaves as it's been evolving over the past, you know, month or two, This is very consistent with that weak El Nino.
All right. Thank you very much.
And this is the that was the last question at this time that I see in the queue.
Great. Thank you so much, Michelle. All right. That's going to conclude our conference call for today. I want to thank our speakers, Mike Halpert, Deputy Director of NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, David Miskin, meteorologist and drought expert at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, for their expertise. The Winter Outlook news release and maps are available at www.noaa.gov. If you have any follow-up questions, feel free to send me an email or call. Again, my email is Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N, gachef@noaa.gov, and my cell phone number is 202-740-8314. That concludes our briefing on the U.S. Winter Outlook, and I thank you all for joining us today.
This concludes today's conference. All participants may disconnect at this time. Thank you again for your participation.